Okay, so is it about actual drought or is it about politics down in Olympia? You know, there's stuff going on with water, lack thereof, things being hot, dry, you know, drought related stuff. But at the same time, the actions of the state and our state's leader, our governor, Jay Inslee, seem to be inconsistent with dealing with an apparent drought or drought crisis or drought emergency, whatever the official declaration is now, because they weren't declaring an emergency, and then they were in some areas but not in other areas, and I don't mean areas physically, but different categories. It seems like there was more politics being played than actual concern about a drought. And of course, drought impacts farmers in a significant way. Eastern Washington is a big concern. Some of these dryland farmers over there are really struggling with the climate conditions that we're running into this summer. Welcome back to the Farming Show, by the way. Dylan Honkoop here on KGMI News Talk 790. Joining me right now with the Washington Policy Center is Pam Lewison, the director for their initiative on agriculture. And Pam, you have been tracking this so much better than I have. And you're in the thick of it over there in Eastern Washington, where things are actually really dry as compared to here, where I feel some of the, I see that there's concern on the horizon for drought here locally, but it's not maybe as bad as some people think here in Western Washington. Certainly cause for concern, but, you know, the wheels haven't come off yet here, But Pam, you're feeling it over there in Eastern Washington, and you're watching what's happening coming out of Olympia, and I've been sensing some kind of head scratching as you've covered this on your blog at the Washington Policy Center.
Yeah, I think there's some interesting dynamics going on with the drought declarations as they have sort of rolled out over the last few weeks. But we have to backtrack a little bit to mid-June when both of our grain growing associations here in Washington State sort of reached out to the governor's office and implored the governor's office to declare a drought for the grain growing counties in this state, or the grain heavy counties in the state, which are primarily here in Eastern Washington, so that they could get some relief from the dry conditions we're seeing over here. And the governor's office kicked the decision over to Ecology, and Ecology essentially sent a letter back to the Washington State Grain Commission and the Washington Association of Wheat Growers that said, yeah, we're just not ready yet to declare a drought. And so
are there metrics that set benchmarks for when these kinds of things happen?
You know, there don't appear to be. It seems to be some, I don't want to say arbitrary, but it seems like Ecology has a very unusual system for what they want to say causes a drought or not.
If you say arbitrary, this is just in my head. I'm replacing that word with political. But that's because of my deep level of skepticism, some might even say cynicism, about our Washington State Department of Ecology. But anyway, I interrupt.
Well, I think it gets particularly sticky that Ecology declined to declare a drought at the request of grain growers in our state when you shine a light on it that the USDA had already contacted Washington State and said, hey, we feel like your lack of moisture in Eastern Washington means that you do, in fact, have an extreme and severe drought going on in your state, and your growers are eligible for federal drought relief dollars.
So the feds are beating the state to the punch. They're already declaring a drought, and the state at that point was still dragging its feet, even though they should be, you know, first line of defense. This is close to home.
Yes. So
bizarre.
It is bizarre. And what's more bizarre is that it took Ecology about a month, probably felt like a year, to respond to the grain growers. And so about a month has lapsed before they get this response, and that response comes back, and then approximately a week later, the governor says, we have a drought in this state that's causing wildfires. So the grain growers can't have a drought, but our state can have a drought for wildfires. So
the plot thickens.
Right. So I wrote a blog pointing this out and saying, hey, that seems like kind of a double standard here. You know, grain growers reached out to you all over a month ago asking for some relief, and you declined to provide it. And now you're saying there's a drought for wildfires, but there's not enough of a drought for grain growers. What's happening here? And interestingly, less than 24 hours later, magically, there's a drought for grain growers too.
Somebody's reading your blog in Olympia, Pam. I just got to say that. Pam Lewison with us, by the way, here on the Farming Show on KGMI. I'm Dylan Honkoop. If something is an actual emergency, or if there are real things going on the ground affecting people, this should not be a place or a time to be playing politics. But as I say that, I think about our past over, you know, what, a year and a half now of political moves via COVID, et cetera, and a long history of playing politics with crises long before that. So I realize this is a real thing, but it still needs to be called out. Why would you be playing politics with a drought declaration that could help out some folks? So then within 24 hours, Pam, you're saying things happened. What's next? Did that fix the problem?
Well, I think what's really tragic about it is that the grain growers reached out in mid-June, which would have provided them some relief on a state level, because a drought declaration from our State Department of Ecology would have allowed for some things like emergency transfers of water rights. So just because the vast majority of wheat in particular in this state is grown in a dryland manner doesn't mean that the growers of those crops don't own water rights. And what they could have done is gone into their local DOE office and asked for an emergency transfer, seasonal transfer of their water rights from an adjacent field and onto their wheat crop to water it up, which would have saved a lot of people a significant yield. And instead, because there was a lag of 30 days or more, those crops, it was too late. It was too late for the wheat to receive water when we're talking about mid-July now. So instead of getting some water relief and the ability to try to get those wheat berries matured in the hull, what we're seeing now is dryland farmers in particular going out and harvesting wheat 2 weeks, 3 weeks earlier than they would have because the wheat's already dried down and ready to go.
How what are you hearing as far as estimates of losses for the for these folks? You know, over here on the west side, we've been talking about, you know, anywhere from 20 to 40, some people 60, in some rare cases 70 or 80% losses on, you know, blueberries and raspberries. What are these wheat and grain growers facing?
Well, on average, if you have a decent year, dryland wheat can still average anywhere from 60, 70, 80 bushel an acre. This year, I've heard rumor of some people reporting they'll be lucky if they get 20 bushel. And I have driven past some fields where you're seeing daylight between the stalks. I mean, it's pretty bad. So, you know, it has the potential to be really devastating, even for dryland guys who are used to a pretty low yield crop. You know, we here in the basin, we're an irrigated area. We're blessed with surface water from the Columbia. So it's not out of the ordinary for us to see 120 bushel wheat. But we're surrounded by dryland farms. And so we're well aware of what's happening outside of the bubble of the irrigation districts. And to hear someone say, you know, I'll be lucky if I get, you know, 40, 50 bushel wheat, is, you know, that's something that hits you kind of in your heart
so,
a little bit.
So possibly the biggest thing that these folks missed out on, it wasn't a handout. That wasn't exactly what they were asking for. They weren't just asking for an infusion of cash. What they were asking for was just a little bit of flexibility in water and the regulations governing the use of water. I think everyone should agree that our water resources here in Washington state, no matter where we are in the state, should be going to where they're most needed and being balanced that way. But they weren't able to do that because the state was dragging its feet on an emergency drought declaration.
I think really what people were asking for was the ability to try. You know, farmers are fabulous at pivoting and thinking on their feet. And if you had a water right available to you, or you had some other way to water up your crop, all you needed was the opportunity to try. And to have ecology say, well, only 8% of wheat in Washington state is an irrigated crop, so we don't see how you could possibly have any option to try. That's the problem. It's a fundamental misunderstanding of how agriculture is able to try.
Dylan Honkoop here on KGMI on your Saturday morning here with the Farming Show. Our guest right now, Pam Lewison. She's the director of the Initiative on Agriculture with the Washington Policy Center, talking about this drought situation and the political machinations that went into whether or not the state was recognizing the drought and its impacts, particularly for farming in Washington state. Pam, by the way, congrats on that great piece that you had published in the Seattle Times recently, kind of getting in a real poignant way at this bigger picture that you're talking about of understanding the world of agriculture and how that operates differently than bean counters and bureaucrats often tend to recognize.
Oh, thank you very much. I think that what that op-ed points to really is that the agricultural community is different, and that we are a community of people who focus every day on having to get work done. And it isn't about handouts, though, funnily enough, even though we as a state have declared for a drought for the last 5 years at least, the Department of Ecology came out shortly after and said that, you know, part of their hesitancy to declare a drought emergency was that they only had budgeted $350,000 for drought relief, which is absolutely absurd.
Drought relief just for farming or drought relief for anything in the state?
Anything in the state. as we discussed previously, you know, if it's me trying to be prepared as a mom and farmer, if I have a snowstorm that knocks the power out to my house 5 years running, I'm probably going to run to the store and pick up a generator. What I'm not going to do is continue to rely on candles and a flashlight to keep my house warm.
Ain't going to work. And if right. if you have the ability, you have the money in your bank account, if you know, to further this analogy here, Pam, if you have the money in your bank account, you have the ability to go to the store, you have the pickup to haul that generator home. At some point, if winter after winter this keeps happening and that's all the better you prepare is candles and flashlights, people are going to say, you're crazy. That you didn't prepare you and yourself and your family for this situation that keeps happening over and over.
Well, not only are you crazy, but to a certain extent, you deserve what happens to you.
Yeah, but see, I mean, this doesn't affect those bureaucrats that make these decisions. Who it affects is the real people on the ground, and they end up paying the price. So do the bureaucrats deserve it? Yeah, but they don't pay the price in this drought scenario.
And I think ultimately what it means really is that we need a system, whether it's through ecology or somewhere else, where the agricultural community is allowed to govern everything that affects their farm to the best of their ability and have as little paperwork and as little interference from agencies like Ecology as possible. And the drought is a great instance of that. If every farmer who had access to water rights had been able to walk in and say, hey, I have a USDA drought emergency declaration in front of me, that is enough for me to come in here and ask for an emergency seasonal transfer. That should be enough. If the USDA wants to supersede our state and recognize sooner than our state that we have a situation here that needs relief, that should be good enough for any farmer in this state to walk in and say, move my water.
Absolutely. And go ahead.
Maybe that's the lesson we learn from this situation. Yep.
Well, I think your larger point too applies to so many things across farming and far beyond. This issue of government and, hi, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. And this top-down philosophy that folks in those positions, I'm not saying there's some great, and I've said this many times on this show and other shows, there's not necessarily any sort of crazy conspiracy. It's just baked in to people who are in those positions. Their job is to be the government and try to help. Whether it's a politician trying to show, you know, get votes and say that they're helping, or bureaucrats who are trying to save the world and do. And so it's not even necessarily from a bad motivation. But I'm leery anytime, even when, you know, times aren't dire and the government says, well, you know, here's an issue. What can we do to help? Get out of the way is often my answer. But that's rarely the philosophy that we hear coming from Olympia, because they feel like they need help. It has to be a top-down thing. They're going to figure it out, and they're going to tell us what to do. In few communities, other than the farming community, is it more strongly felt the sense of independence of, we're going to figure it out, and if things get really bad, we'll come ask for help. Otherwise, butt out, and we'll take care of it.
Well, I think that, you know, goes back to the op-ed I wrote, and the ultimately farmers, generally speaking, are a group of people who would prefer, because they know their operation, they know their land, and they know what it is they do day in and day out, that would rather take care of it themselves unless there is no other alternative. And that's where we need to have lawmakers who understand what it is we do. And it goes both ways. We need to be more proactive about reaching out to our lawmakers about what it is we do and why we need them to let us do what we do best, which is run our own farms and ranches with very little interference. And then the reverse is true. We need to have lawmakers who are open to listening to us and truly open to understanding what it is we do and why it's so important.
Pam Lewison with the Washington Policy Center. She's their director for their initiative on agriculture. She's also a farmer in Eastern Washington in the Moses Lake area. Pam, we appreciate the good work that you do and the fact that you bird dog these issues. You follow them so closely and you speak out immediately when something stinks. And that was certainly what was going on here. It needed to be called out. And in your effectiveness in calling it out, it certainly brought action pretty quickly. So good on you. Keep up the good work. And we also appreciate you taking the time out of, I'm sure, your busy schedule to chat with us here this morning. Fill us in on the background of what was going on.
Well, thanks for having me, Dylan. I appreciate it.
Headline: as drought worsens, Whatcom farmers call for immediate action. Welcome back to the Farming Show. I'm Dylan Honkoop here on KGMI. What's this immediate action and what's going on with the drought, particularly here with farming in Whatcom County? Farmers in Whatcom County here are urging all parties to come to the table and begin collaborative work to protect fish and local farming. So what is the story here? Joining me on the Farming Show on this Saturday morning is Fred Lickle, executive director of Whatcom Family Farmers. Fred, thanks for being here this morning.
Are
farmers really hurting from this drought out here, or what exactly is the reason for alarm?
Well, I think it's a combination of both the short term and the long term issues, Dylan. You know, the short term, yeah, we had a dry spring, as most people know. Mm-hmm. April, May was one of the driest on record. And then we had, of course, the really big June heat wave. And that has created some challenges in places where people don't have good access to water. But it's also made us look at, okay, what's coming in the future? Not only do we have, as we've talked, you and I have talked about on this show, challenges related to legal access to water going forward, we also have this challenge of climate change, which, depending on how you look at it, that may or may not be a big challenge. But I don't think there's any doubt that it is going to be something that we need to be looking at as we go to the future. Climate change is something that is going to cause more challenges for us as we go forward.
I've heard some say that potentially climate change could mean summers that are even hotter and drier, but potentially winters maybe that are wetter and cooler. I don't know if they'll be cooler, but more precipitation in the wintertime.
Well, and that's one of the encouraging things that we've said about, at least for the projections here in Whatcom County in Western Washington. They're not talking about less water coming down. They're talking about it coming down at different times. So more water in the winter, spring, fall range. Even less rain in the summer, which is going to cause us even more challenges for our growing season, for sure.
Well, maybe to jump ahead to kind of the crux of the issue then, how does a whole bunch of water, and we know we get a lot of it in the wintertime, how does that wintertime water, rain, snow, floods, how does that help us when we get to this time of year when things are bone dry and the streams are running lower than they should be, particularly for fish?
Well, for our farmers, we receive an awful lot of our, a lot of guys get their moisture, their water from the aquifers underneath the ground, the Sumas Abbotsford and other places where there's a lot of water available. That's probably 85%. Another group get water out of the surface water streams. They are helping to replenish that soil all year round. Right, that's there for the farmers to draw off all year round. So, the concern is if what's going to happen once we start having challenges with drought and with less water, what is that going to mean for how we withdraw those waters, and especially for the guys in the surface water? If there's less water coming down in the summer, how are they going to irrigate their crops? It becomes a little bit of a challenge to discuss.
So are some folks having issues irrigating right now and there's not enough water for them?
Yeah, we are seeing, in a few places, especially for the surface water withdrawals, talking to folks in the floodplain and others and spots where they don't have wells, where they're drawing it out of places. Some of them have what's known as interruptible rights. So once the river gets too low, they're not allowed to take water out anymore. Well, you combine that, okay, now maybe we can no longer irrigate certain fields, along with the challenge of a super hot or super dry the last couple of months summer. And yeah, I've talked to a couple of folks that are looking at some significant yield losses, 20-30%, maybe more in certain fields. That creates some challenges.
And this isn't talking about the heat damage that we heard about primarily in the berries. You're talking about damage caused by not enough water available.
Exactly. So, some of these fields, grass, corn, maybe potatoes, others, places where we just don't have, we can't water them right now, and they need water. So you're going to see, crops starting to shrink up, and the corn will get the leaves to kind of curl up, and grass fields will just kind of go dormant. Those things are happening out there right now for some of these farmers, which is a real challenge for, okay, where am I, if it's a dairy, a lot of times that's a dairy, where am I going to get my feed from next fall? What does this look like?
Yeah, a lot of people may not recognize the fact that all these crops are grown oftentimes to feed the animals.
That's right.
In the local dairy world, the corn and the grass, a few other crops as well, but primarily those two grown to feed the animals. And so if you can't grow enough crops. What are you going to feed your animals? Well, the only other option you have then is to buy crops that are grown elsewhere, either locally or, you know, farther away. That gets expensive. That changes the whole equation. That can put a farm out of business. That's if they can't afford to feed their animals.
Exactly right. And I think, you know, this brings us back to some of that challenge we've talked about with legal water rights and what that means for the Nooksack. Because one of the things that the Nooksack doesn't have that even places like the Skagit or certainly Eastern Washington is storage for their water. So we don't have, especially for the Nooksack River, we don't have dams upstream that can keep the water back. So like, for instance, something to look at in the Nooksack is we actually had quite a bit of snowpack. We had, it was in excess of 120% of normal this year. It was looking really good. And then the super hot weather hit in June. And in a very short period of time, we went to, hey, we're doing great with a surplus, to, oh boy, you know, we're getting down to under what's known as in-stream flows. And we're kind of back to, we even ended up about a week ahead of where we would normally be. And that's with a high snowpack. That was because of the super high, hot weather we had. And in other areas, in the Yakima Basin, for example, they have these storage basins that are chock full of water. And they can release that over time to help feed the crops, to help the salmon, which is a key thing, getting that cool, clean water down there. Right now, we don't have that option in the Nooksack, and that is a concern.
But again, as you said earlier, a lion's share of irrigation water comes from the reservoir that we do have, which is our groundwater, right? Which is replenished by all of that rainfall and runoff throughout the winter to balance out the problem that we talked about earlier is we have too much water in the winter, not enough in the dry parts of the summer. How to equalize those two and better manage that? Yeah, what is the trick there? Because it sounds like groundwater can be a great answer for farming and irrigation, and in a lot of cases already has been.
Yes.
But it's not necessarily the same answer for our streams and protecting salmon, which is another major concern in this water discussion that our community is in.
Well, and that's one of the things that we would have been really encouraging folks to look at. That's why we've talked about people need to come to the table here and discuss these solutions, because we do have aquifers that could be able to help. We've already shown, you know, the farmers showed a couple years ago in the Bertrand Creek area that they could pump water out of groundwater wells, supplement the stream, which is only going to help the salmon, and do this during the low flow season, which is usually going to be August, September, and make a difference. But unfortunately, no one wants to really, or there are certain parties that really don't want to get together and discuss those collaborative solutions that could really help. Instead, we are stuck in a quagmire of discussing legal rights, what's legally happening. And that's why we're saying, we need to step up to the plate and answer these questions now. You know, the issues with climate change are real. The issues with legal water rights are real. We can't wait 20 or 30 or more years for, you know, this legal adjudication to go through to fix those, because we won't have farms and fish left with the way things are going.
Yeah, it's interesting. Governor Jay Inslee, in the past week or so, declaring an official drought emergency in Washington State. And we talked with Pam Lewison a bit about the political machinations that went into that declaration and all that. But one of the comments he made was, and you could tell he was, you know, leveraging the issue as hard as he could, not necessarily to help Washingtonians as much as to highlight the threat of climate change, which certainly is a real thing. But you need to look at all, you know, the human impact as well as the ongoing issue. In saying that, he said, we can't keep pressing the snooze button on dealing with climate change. Well, an adjudication, a water rights adjudication, is pressing the snooze button on dealing with some of these issues here in the Nooksack Basin for decades.
Yeah, that's a mighty big snooze button right there.
Yeah.
That's being hit, hitting the snooze over and over and over again. Pam was very correct in that, you know, in that analogy there, because it's, and so was the governor, ironically enough, because it is a snooze. And, you know, he and Director Watson both talked about that we need to look at other solutions. And one of those solutions is water storage. So instead of going down that line, we're going the opposite way. to create more challenges. Yeah.
And it's really a hypocritical position to be on one hand saying we can't keep hitting snooze, to have an agency director say we need to be focused on drought resiliency and building storage, yet at the same time here in the Nooksack Basin be supporting a legal water rights adjudication, which is the opposite direction of not hitting snooze and getting to work on improving things.
Yes, absolutely. You know, this legal situation that we're talking about with adjudication is going to cause everybody to stop doing what they're doing while we figure out who has legal rights and who doesn't. And if you look at what happened in the Yakima, it was, what, 42 years before they came to solution, and people are still appealing the solution.
Yeah, we had Don Jenkins with Capital Press on the show a couple of weeks ago on that exact issue, new legal appeals filed in that case. So is the situation in Yakima even settled yet, 44 years later now? And why is the state pursuing a similar process here locally when that one is still dragging on?
Yeah, it
boggles the mind. By the way, and we're talking with Fred Lickle right now. He's executive director of Whatcom Family Farmers. I'm Dylan Honkoop here on the Farming Show on KGMI. Did I ever tell you, Fred, I had this dorm mate? He wasn't my roommate, thank goodness, but a guy in my dorm, a room or two down the hall from me in college, who there was one morning in particular, he loved the snooze button.
Okay.
He set his alarm, I believe it was for 8 a.m., which in the world of college, that's early, right?
That's
it
true.
May have been
that's
9. And this guy's a big-time night owl, right? Mm-hmm. He's up until 3 o'clock in the morning every day.
Mm-hmm.
He kept hitting snooze, and I think those are what, like every 7 minutes or something?
Sure.
A lot of clocks? He kept hitting snooze until 1 o'clock in the afternoon. He could be working with Jay Inslee on this.
He should be.
If anybody knows how to do
ecology.
It, yes. My dorm mate Keith could show him how to hit the snooze button that long.
There you go. There you go, Dylan. That's what we need.
Every 7 minutes.
Oh, man. You know, getting back to what we could be doing, though, you know, there are plenty of things that we could be doing. And you know, we've listed water storage and stream augmentation as just a couple of those things.
Yep.
And those are things that we want to come to the table on. Water use efficiency improvements. There are a lot of things that could be done to research this. Already, you know, the fruit guys have done a lot, you know, raspberry and blueberry, to look at how could we improve that. Some of the potato guys have as well. There's always more that could be done.
And this is ultimately to help fish.
Yes. Yeah.
Right? The idea is to get more fish in the river. It's an important thing for environmental purposes, but also cultural purposes for the local tribes, economic purposes for them to be able to fish, catch fish, all of that. So then, you know, what about all the options as well that can help the fish in the river beyond just water? I don't want to say that water isn't a part of that, almost any one of those things, but what about this proposal for Alaskan-style hatchery?
We at Whatcom Family Farmers would fully support that, and I would think that others would too. If you look at the research and the work that's been done behind that, it could do an awful lot to bring more salmon into the picture in a way that it works reasonably well with the system. Once again, instead of that being brought forward, it's being tabled in the background because we have to discuss legal water rights. And it brings to question, what is really the goal here? Is the goal to save salmon and farms, or is it to discuss who's got what legally? Why don't we come to the table and discuss what our needs are and discuss how we can meet those? Because the solutions are right there. And if you talk to those who have been engaged, including attorneys and former heads of Department of Ecology and others, they will scratch their heads at, we feel like the solutions are right there in Whatcom County to work with. We just need to be able to sit down as a community and work through what those could look like.
And groups still, even with all of that as the backdrop, still refuse to come to the table so far and sit down and actually talk about this.
I would say the word refuse might be a bit strong, but they certainly are dragging their feet on let's get together and discuss collaborative solutions, unless we have this legal process first.
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, regardless of the legal backdrop, and we could haggle about that at any time, but why would anyone who really cares about fish and really cares about local food and farming and the future of this community, why would anyone not want to say, absolutely, I'm jumping on that right now. Let's get together and see what we can get working on.
That's the big, you've asked the big question right there, Dylan. It is one that I fail to see the answer to, other than we just want an adjudication. That's all we hear. Well, who does that benefit? Probably a bunch of attorneys. You know, maybe it's issues with control of water. I would imagine nobody's going to want to admit to that. That could be, you know, a big part of it as well. You know, the Department of Ecology stands to gain a lot as far as talk about guaranteed jobs. They'll have 40 years worth of a job. You know, that's somebody we should certainly be looking at, because it sure doesn't seem like they really put out an honest analysis of what an adjudication could and would do, given what happened in the Yakima.
Well, we don't really even know all of the answers of what actually happened in the Yakima, how much it cost, what all went down. Some of those details still haven't been answered.
No, exactly. It was just everything is all roses when it came to the Department of Ecology and an adjudication. And all of those negatives were never answered. And now we're going to see those negatives starting to come out, and the challenges that we have, you know, the chickens are coming to roost, basically.
Yeah. State Senator Doug Erickson, who was on the program talking about it recently, about his letter that he sent to the State Department of Ecology. In that letter, he called it a sales job of them trying to sell this whole idea of a water rights adjudication being a great option. It's going to do all these good things, and it's going to cause minimal harm. It just doesn't seem to add up. And, you know, adjudication or not, it's mind-boggling to me that anyone who truly, genuinely cares about our rivers and streams and fish and local food and farming in our community, why someone who is in that position wouldn't want to jump at the chance to work together across divides in the community to really get things done. Let's bring fish back, and let's do it in a few years. Let's hammer down. Let's get on with it. That's what I'm hearing right now from the farming community. What is this about the table and coming to the table? The farming community is saying they're at the table. Has yes. that been an issue in the past, getting farmers to be on board with this? It hasn't
Certainly
been that
not.
I've heard.
No, I mean, the farmers have struggled with, because of the way the rules were created, and because, at least for many, the idea of groundwater rights was not made clear to them, as we've discussed in this show, you know, probably 60, 70, 80 years ago. Some of them would hold more junior rights than even like some of the cities and certainly the tribes. So they're in a lot of an insecure position just as much as anybody else. They would love to see, you know, let's come to the table. Let's discuss solutions. Let's talk this out. But unfortunately, too many times laws and agendas get in the way. And we could really use a reset on some of these laws. We could use Governor Inslee and his ecology staff to come to the table to discuss real solutions, not just adjudication.
Yeah, put their money where their mouth is as far as this whole snooze button idea and ditching the snooze button and actually rolling up the sleeves and getting to work on real solutions. Fred Lickle, Executive Director of Watkin Family Farmers, with me here on the Farming Show this morning. Fred, thanks for your time to chat with us this morning.
Thank you, Dylan.